It is so bizarre to think that around Christmas in 2019, we could all go overseas, have heaps of people over, work at an actual establishment. 2020, of course, has changed all of that because of something that initially seemed like a problem pretty far away from us, coronavirus. Hello, Avani Dias here. And on these episodes of Hack, we're looking back on the biggest events of the year. And a lot of it revolves around the global pandemic. It's changed things in a way we could not have predicted. And although we are lucky to have a sort of normal sense of things at the moment in Australia, the risks are definitely not over.
Hack.
Coronavirus.
COVID-19.
Coronavirus.
Australia has recorded its biggest one-day spike in cases.
The coronavirus nearing 20 million cases worldwide.
It's going to get worse.
Suspending all travel.
This is a pandemic by any definition.
The defining health crisis of our generation.
It will kill thousands of people if it gets completely away from us.
Millions of people are tonight bracing for the start of the new lockdown, now just a few hours away.
On Triple J.
Yeah, I really want to hear from you today. How has coronavirus changed your life? I want to know the full impact as we reflect on it today. Call me. Maybe you were a frontline worker, caring for a loved one, losing work. 1-300-055-36. Give me a call. And yeah, it was really hard to get our heads around the pandemic, especially when lockdowns were first starting. It's fair to say it's the biggest thing we've experienced in our lives. And we got through it on Hack with the help of some of our friends, like Marty Smiley from The Feed. How's it going?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good. And Iza Stashkovsky from The Today Show. How are you?
Hello. I'm great. How are you guys?
Good. Iza, I want to go to you first because you're in Melbourne and obviously we know the lockdown in Melbourne was so long, it affected everyone. Yeah. When you look back on this year, how has coronavirus affected your life?
Do you know what? I cannot believe that there was a moment where we couldn't leave our home within 5 kilometres. That is crazy. Yeah. I think looking at Melbourne now, like, it's starting to come back to life. People aren't wearing masks outside. We're going to restaurants. We're seeing our friends. I was at the beach last night walking my dog and there were heaps of people out enjoying the water. It's a far cry from a year ago, but we're getting there. It's just crazy to think we were in this intense lockdown for more than 100 days.
Totally. And Marty, you know, I was looking back on a story you did early in the year when lockdown started and it was so beautiful because you went home to care for your mum, right? And that was something that so many people had to do. They had to think about loved ones who were maybe immunocompromised, who just had to be protected from this virus. What was it like for you caring for a family member during this year?
Well, I guess it wasn't great that mum was immunocompromised and in that situation, but I was really grateful that I got to be with her. So on the one hand, coronavirus sucks, but on the other hand, it did mean that I got to be there with her during that time. And really, I haven't done that since I was a teenager. So I was back in the parents' home, suddenly in this new realm.
In the bunk beds, I remember.
Back in the bunk bed. Which mum appreciated hugely, and you know, we got to bond a bit more and that sort of stuff. So, and I'm looking forward to going down again to see them over the Christmas break. And yeah,
and you know, a lot of young people moved back home this year as well, so that was something that happened to a lot of people too. Lani has called in. How did COVID affect you?
Well, it affected me because I had injured myself at work on a casual job, and then when COVID hit, I lost work for a couple of months there. But mostly I'm more concerned about my family, my grandparents and great aunts and uncles in Mallacoota. I'm sure you guys heard a lot about them earlier this year, but they were hit by the bushfires. And then just as they were starting to pick up the pieces again, COVID hit, and a lot of their income comes from tourism. And obviously no one was allowed to visit and go up there, and I haven't been able to see them that much this year, and I probably won't see them for Christmas either.
No.
When I do see them, I'll make sure that we do it in the safest way possible, and that, you know, possibly even get tested, I don't know. So I just wanted to give them a little shout out because they are such a strong community, but they shouldn't have had to have been this year because they've dealt with not only having their lives threatened by one natural disaster, but also you know, they're a small town with only one or two GPs, I think, and the nearest hospital is like a 3-hour drive away. So, yeah, I was really worried about them with COVID because it's quite a high proportion of elderly people as well.
Totally. And Lani, massive shout outs to your grandparents. It's quite emotional hearing like the bushfires, then COVID,
I love them so much.
You know?
Yeah, no, they're my favourite people and they deserve to get back on their feet. Everyone in that community is so lovely.
Yeah. Are things getting better for them?
Yeah, they're getting there. But yeah, no, it's hopefully the tourism will pick up a little bit, but at the same time, we can't have too much crowding down there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's my favourite place. It's my happy place. So
yeah. Lani, thank you so much for calling in.
Part of Victoria.
Yeah. And thanks for calling in. And also I hope you see your grandparents soon. That's the big thing.
January, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks so much. Someone's texted, I calculated that I spent around 55% of my year in lockdown across two countries, including hotel quarantine. Seeing how Belgium, where I moved in February, is going now, I've never been so happy to get back to Australia. Another thing that's changed was our jobs as journalists, like Iza and Marty. On Hack, it's been really strange covering this pandemic because you're living it day to day and then you're also providing accurate information when things are changing so consistently. On the show, we've been recording things from our closets at home, answering thousands of questions from you about lockdown and work. It's changed how we do this show. So I wanted to bring in one of our reporters, Stephen Stockwell. He's in Brisbane. Stocky, thanks for coming on the show. You're always on the show, but thanks for chatting to us. I mean, what was it like for you covering COVID and working as a journalist through this?
I think it was really nice to like just know that you're doing something good and something useful at the time. You know, we do lots of stories, we do some really fun stuff, we do some really weird stuff. But, you know, when all this happened, there were just so many questions that people had and there was so much stuff that we didn't know. So, you know, having the opportunity to kind of help people understand, to sift through all that information and, you know, make it digestible and, you know, save people from getting scared, really, just felt good. It felt nice to be able to help and at a time when, you know, a lot of people really needed help.
Yeah, Marty, do you relate to that as well? What was it like doing a TV reporting job? Iza can relate to this too, from home.
Not great. it wasn't very enjoyable. One of the things I love about the job I do is I get to travel the country and meet people face-to-face, and that was obviously taken away. So, but on the other hand, I felt a real deep sense of responsibility to inform people, you know, and that felt great to, and to kind of funnel my energy and focus into making sure that we were properly, informing people of what was going on and try and explain things as you know, simply as we could.
Yeah, Iza, what about you? Because obviously Melbourne was the worst hit in many ways, but what was it like for you on a personal level, you know, covering it consistently, but then also having to deal with it on a mental level, caring for your family, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think it was a crazy experience. I mean, I think we're all pretty privileged to have worked throughout it. So many people weren't able to do that. And, you know, we got the worker permits and things like that. But just the concept that we had this piece of paper and having to do it that way. But yeah, we just had to change all our processes and sit down and brainstorm and go, how can we be code safe? How can we do this to be accurate and get stories out there, but also protect our community too? So, I mean, wearing masks, making sure that we were socially distant. We had to totally change the way we shoot things. But I think everyone really worked together and kind of just came together to try and get accurate stories out there, but also uplifting stories out there. There were so many moments where people did really beautiful things for other people. And I think we all really needed that when we were low and when we were struggling. And, you know, I guess for all of us in the media, day after day, reporting on something that you can't switch off, it is hard and it takes a toll. So I think definitely checking in with people who you love and your community and, you know, having that kind of tools that you can use to make sure your mental health is okay and to check in on others as well was really important. But a very different experience reporting in a city that was at a standstill.
Yeah, and everything has changed for everyone because the text line is going off. Someone says, recording from your closet just makes me imagine you locked under the stairs like Harry Potter with a microphone. To be honest, it is a bit like that.
under the doona.
The doona was a big one, yeah.
I like do under man. The doona, yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the bunk bed under the doona and I was like, this brings me back to like trying to read a book like past my bedtime.
Were you actually just asleep the whole year, you know? Someone else says, I've saved 15 and a half days of travel time due to working from home. Someone else says, I was made redundant from my 21-year aviation career. It sucked and I miss my workmates, but I'm luckier than many. That's Diane in Randwick. Stephen Stockwell, you've actually been looking back on how COVID started and it's pretty crazy because you were actually in China at the start of the year, right?
Yeah, so I was visiting family in the UK over Christmas and, yeah, went there via China. So popped in on the way there, went out, like hung out in the street, wandered through Guangzhou, which was like fascinating and really cool. And then, yeah, on the way back, yeah, passed through the airport as well, which was pretty wild. And like at the time, like, this is first week of January. So at this point, we'd only known about coronavirus for about a week. Like it had existed since the middle of December, but no one had known about it since sort of like just before the new year. So that wasn't something that even registered at all. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was talk of like the Black Death getting around in China at the end of last year. Like that's what I was worried about. I had no idea what we were about to get ourselves into.
Yeah, totally.
A little bit of the Black Death followed by a little martini of coronavirus.
Yeah, let's go right back to the start of this. Can you guys believe that this is what I said on our very first show of Hack this year in January? Should we be freaking out about the coronavirus? Five people now have it in Australia.
Well, I reckon the answer is a pretty clear yes now. But back when this went to air on the 28th of January, the first hack of the year, we were still working out exactly how bad this would be.
The World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern.
This is February 1st, so a few days after that show. It was the same day the Australian government banned travellers from mainland China.
Our government is taking every step necessary to keep Australians safe.
Cases slowly crept up over the next month, and on the 1st of March, a 79-year-old man died in Perth.
Obviously, our condolences are with his family, and unfortunately, he's the first death we've had from coronavirus in Australia.
This is when things started to change pretty quickly. We banned international travellers from Australia, I was told to work from home, and while the idea of shutting down the country seemed pretty extreme, that's what ended up happening. In late March, pubs, clubs and churches were all closed.
So I would seek and implore Australians to follow this advice. You will be saving lives and you'll be saving livelihoods.
This is the moment that really sticks with me because the following day, there were just these huge lines outside Centrelink offices around the country.
I've been here for almost 4 hours now in line.
JobSeeker was announced at this point for people who'd lost work, but we'd have to wait another week before we saw JobKeeper, which was the one designed to encourage employers to keep people on.
I was working in events and that industry got cancelled. It was one of the first to go.
Gyms were closed too. No more weddings. There was that whole toilet paper thing. And I think it was probably around this time that we realised that our lives were going to be very different for the next little while. This is when everything kind of started to blur together. Days lost all their meaning, I lost weeks to TikTok, and it was just this parade of different press conferences telling us what we were and weren't allowed to do. But hey, at least we were blessed with this.
Beers, 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 get on the beers.
It did feel like ages before things opened up though, and we were allowed back on the beers.
3 months, we out and we're back.
We on it tonight.
In WA, things started getting back to normal around June, but in Melbourne, after it felt like they'd got on top of it, the virus broke out of hotel quarantine and cases started to grow. First, they locked down some community housing towers, then a whole bunch of suburbs, and eventually, the whole state.
Cusp of a second wave, what people want to call this is entirely irrelevant. We have to be realistic about the circumstances that we confront.
Hack on Triple J.
Stephen Stockwell there, yeah, looking back on the first half of this global pandemic, call me, did you ever think COVID would get so bad here in Australia? How did it affect you? 1-300-055-36. Monique, what happened to you during COVID?
Hello. So I got made redundant, which at first seemed very dramatic,
But then I ended up making the most of it, and I bought a van and went travelling around New South Wales for 3 months. Whoa,
that's so good. There's a nice story from COVID, which is great.
Yeah, I thought I'd try to change up the vibe. And I didn't realise how many incredible places there were in New South Wales. Mm. So I've had an absolute life-changing blast.
Oh, that's great. And I feel like it's, you know, coming up to the summer, people may have time off and obviously we can't go overseas. So, you know, travel around Australia.
Were locals absolutely happy to see you? Or were they a bit more apprehensive? Like, you're bringing the Rona into my town.
Yeah, well, back in July, they were really excited, and then I said off to Sydney, and it was a bit of panic. But once it hit about August, people started calming down a little, and they were just happy to have someone walk through their door. So
that's good.
That's great. Monique, thanks so much for calling in. A lot of texts coming in. Yeah, someone else, COVID rules, one of the best years I've ever had. The machine stopped. What could be better? My work only got busier. I had extra money from Super, and just the forced pause in the machine was great. Wow, people really positive about it, which is really nice.
There's something to be said about that. No, like, how else do you pause the world?
Totally.
Unless to have a pandemic.
Yeah, this text is interesting as well. Sorry, Izzy, you go.
I was just going to say, I think the circuit breaker was good for a lot of people. Like, talking to a lot of people in Melbourne, they've kind of gone, oh, well, I didn't go out all the time. I didn't just work and play. I've kind of thought about who I want to be and what my values are. Mm. So I think that's potentially one really good positive. Like, we've all kind of reassessed and maybe become more wholesome.
Yeah, hopefully. This text is interesting, though. The pandemic opened my eyes to how corrupt our Australian politicians are. Marty Smiley from The Feed, what do you think of that?
Yes.
Well, no, not are they corrupt. But, you know, what did this pandemic highlight about the systems, our health systems, our economic systems, and when they were really tested during a crisis?
Well, I think it was very interesting to see a Liberal government essentially give out welfare payments to the whole country. I can see that, you know, any strategists in the party would be fuming over it. But I think that highlights that we're capable of doing something like that. Hopefully it builds empathy in our population for people who are unemployed. So, yeah, I mean, in health regards, we have to have better systems to deal with this in the future. We should have probably been even more prepared than we were for a pandemic. It's not as if these warnings weren't there in the past through other in other situations with diseases. So yeah, I think it's probably a good little refresh for the country to work out and be ready and prepared for something like this in the future. I mean, governments around the world would be looking at that.
Yeah, let's touch wood, though, because no one really wants to go through it again, right?
No.
Rachel is on the line. You're a frontline health worker. How has this you been?
It's been a really challenging year. I'm in hospital management, and our teams went into one of the biggest affected nursing homes. When we came in, there were no staff left who could care for the patients at all, and there was no meals for the residents, and many of them hadn't received nursing care for a number of days. It was pretty horrific. And the team that went in was pretty young, pretty inexperienced, and some of them are still struggling, I think, with some of the stuff that they saw. And I think the healthcare workforce is still pretty traumatised by some of the things that they've seen.
And obviously, you know, we're reflecting on what the failures were that were highlighted through this pandemic. I mean, what was it like for you kind of on the treadmill trying to get things done under the system that existed in aged care?
I think because I'm in a more acute setting, and we had a lot of sympathy for our aged care partners. We felt like they were really left hung out to dry in lots of ways, and that the federal government didn't support them enough. It was pretty sad for them, and they're pretty decimated. A lot of people have voted with their feet and left some of that facility, for example. And can you blame them? You know, when we got out there, we didn't feel that they had adequate PPE. We bought our PPE out, and we only had sympathy for that workforce who were trying to do their best in a really challenging time.
Rachel, do you think that we are better prepared if something like this should happen again? Or, you know, because we're still going into it next year, right?
We talk about the third wave all the time at work and what we'll do. And I think we've got strong things in place. we were you know, like everyone else, trying to do business as usual, doing the same things you were all doing, trying to think about how to socially distance and do our work. But at the same time, we had quite a stressed out workforce, and we had at one point 6 COVID wards in our workplace. And so, you know, it was pretty full on. A lot of the staff were really worried about their own health, but also worry about their families. I think it was worrying about their families that was getting to people the most.
Of course, Rachel, thanks so much for calling in, and just a massive thank you for everything you've done this year, and yeah, to all your colleagues as well. So,
yeah, I think it's the young nurses who have taken the brunt of this, some of our most junior workforce, you know, that we really need to thank.
Totally, Rachel.
The millennials. Yeah. The millennials who entered nursing. They've been the strong ones.
Totally, Rachel. Thanks so much for calling in. So many texts coming in. Elise in Coburg says, going through my first breakup in Melbourne during lockdown, I was living in a share house away from friends and family. Oh. Was also in my first year out of uni learning to work in the industry. This year has been the loneliest and toughest of my life. That's, yeah, awful to hear, and I hope that it does get better for you, Elise. But what you touched on there is that a lot of young people have lost work. The economic consequences of this have been huge, and Stephen Stockwell looked back on, yeah, the effects of that on the economy and jobs for young people.
COVID-19 has resulted in the most severe global economic crisis since the Great Depression. Across the world, the equivalent of 600 million jobs have been lost.
So shutting down really did a number on how much money this country was able to spend and earn. And yes, this is very bad news for a lot of people, but unfortunately, it looks like young people are going to be the ones who really wear it, with the possibility this could hit 18 to 24-year-olds like a depression or world war.
And that can play out in all sorts of ways through their life course, poorer health, poorer employment, less likely to get a job, less likely to form those long-term relationships, buy a house. So it can really disrupt their plans.
There were some small silver linings that started to appear, though. At the end of October, for example, Victoria recorded 0 new coronavirus cases for the first time in what felt like forever.
It is a fabulous morning here in marvellous Melbourne. We are all terribly excited about this news.
And after months of lockdown, the state started to open up.
I'm very pleased to be able to announce that from 11:59pm, Tuesday the 27th of October, all retail will open. Restaurants, hotels, cafes and bars, they will reopen as well.
But as everything opened up here, the US was not in a good way.
Throughout America's COVID crisis, there has been a parade of grim statistics.
More than 16 million people in the US have had coronavirus, and that includes the current president, Donald Trump. Now, Trump recovered, but a lot of people didn't. There have been 300,000 COVID deaths there.
If there is one statistic that stands out above all the others, it is this one. The United States has 4% of the world's population and somehow has 19% of the world's COVID deaths.
The UK was struggling as well, so at the start of last month, they were sent back into lockdown.
And so now is the time to take action because there is no alternative.
That lockdown was supposed to last 4 weeks, but today even tougher restrictions have been announced. There is a bit of good news, though. Last week, the UK started to hand out vaccines.
This is Margaret Keenan, who you can see there. She is 90. She's 91 next week, actually. She was the first person to receive the Pfizer-BioNTech jab.
The US approved one as well. And overnight, the head of emergency medicine at Lenox Hill Hospital was one of the first people to get it.
How does it feel?
It feels great. I'm happy to serve as a role model, to say that this is safe. That is perfectly fine. It's based on science. And then we encourage everyone, when it becomes available, to take the vaccination.
Hack on Triple J.
Stephen Stockwell there. And yeah, who knew that a vaccine would be going into people at this time of the year? It's pretty amazing to see. Lauren has called in. How did the pandemic affect your work?
It's probably been the most traumatic year of my 38 years that I've been on this earth. In January this year, I was made redundant as I was a travel agent with Flight Centre. So that job really doesn't really exist anymore. And then in March this year, my little sister had, so I've got two sisters. In March this year, my little sister had a massive car accident and was in intensive care in Canberra. And she was only allowed to have one visitor per day, so that was really, really, really hard to deal with. And trigger warning. In May this year, my other little sister had a massive asthma attack and was never able to be revived.
Oh, Lauren, that is so awful. Gosh, what a horrible year.
It's really been a bad year. And we're only allowed to have 10 people at her funeral. She was a 22-year-old girl.
Oh, that's so awful. Gosh.
And it was just, it's just been terrible. And then on the flip side, there has been a bit of positivity. So I did obtain a new position this year in our employment services. But even that, our caseloads are as high as what we've ever seen. There is so many people coming onto income support, people that have never, ever, ever had to enter a Services Australia in their life, and this is also new for them. And the mental health that I am seeing in our communities is just it's obscene, and the services they are just not there to back up what's going on at the moment.
That's so much to go through. It's in such a short amount of time. What's gotten you through this year, do you think? What's been really important for you to have, or what's got you through?
Look, I tend to look on the bright side of life. I believe you can find a positive in every negative that happens in your life. Personal growth after trauma is probably some of the biggest growth you will ever have in your life. And I found that. But you know what? My family. Friends and family, being able to reach out to them and just have that phone call to them, Zoom, has been incredible, video calling and things like that. But do you know what? I still think I'm still in the middle of going through everything. I don't think I've still really dealt with everything at the moment.
Well, Lauren, I'm just, so sorry to hear that. And also just like, it's amazing to see that you've had such great support. And I think, you know, this year it's been awful on so many different levels, obviously for some more than others, but I think everyone's been able to reflect on that support and how that's been able to get them through it. So thank you so much for sharing that with us, and hope things do get better for you. And, you know, this is something that we're seeing a lot on the text line, people losing work, people losing family, or, you know, dealing with those health consequences. But one thing that's positive on the text line, someone says, I was amazed to see our state and federal politicians cooperate and getting stuff done. It only lasted a month or two, but I wish it was like that more often. Iza from the Today Show, how did you feel about, you know, how politicians dealt with this? Because let's be honest, Australia has done really well overall, right, compared to the rest of the world.
I mean, this is where you want to be right now, where we're opening up. We can see people in other parts of other states. It's pretty amazing. But at the same time, in the thick of it, mistakes were made. I mean, there was a report that came out in Victoria just, you know, recently looking at how the government responded to this pandemic and basically ignored the advice of doctors. So now they're bringing them on board and they're saying, yeah, let's listen to GPs. But, you know, listening to everyone, you know, today sharing all about the mental health impacts and all those young nurses, all those young people who will be going through trauma right now, like, we spoke to so many family members of people in the aged care system who'd had a family member pass away. That's their life. That is so much trauma. I think it's going to be really ongoing. So we do need our politicians to engage and to understand what people are going through, people who have lost jobs, people who have lost family members, and, yeah, listen to those communities so they can support them into the next year and into the next, you know, however long it's going to take, really.
Yeah, on that note, we've run out of time. There's always so much to talk about. But Iza Stashkovsky from The Today Show, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
My pleasure.
And Marty Smiley from The Feed, thank you as well.
Peace.
Hack on Triple J.
Wow, we really heard from so many Hack listeners. Lexi on the Central Coast texted during that show, 2020 has been a bittersweet year. I actually have come out on top this year. I left a toxic relationship. I found my own place. Although I did have to go on Centrelink, I took advantage of the free education and got myself a certificate in music during the pandemic. It's amazing to see that, you know, we're all kind of unified in a lot of the problems that people have had to face, but people are really seeing some positives to it as well. On the next episode of Hack, we are talking about the next big thing from this year, dating apps, and our investigation into them about whether they're keeping you safe and how that's changed dating in Australia. I'll see you then.